G'day, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 174th. My name's Dick Newman, this is Edward VI the End, and, oh, it sounds like he won't survive the episode, but perhaps he should be like King Donald I and just say, fuck it, no, I'm not going. But King Donald does have to go, he has to make room for all those lovely people that Sleepy Joe has picked. And it's just the usual, same old team that Clinton had and Obama had, the people that bought you endless wars, and the poor getting poorer and the rich getting richer. So expect four more years of that. But the media is a bit of buzz about his actual media team, Sleepy Joe's media team. All girls. All girls. Yeah, Donald's actually already copped that, but it's exciting if Sleepy Joe does it. But it'll be exciting to have a president who can speak for himself instead of a big orange windbag that can't string a sentence together.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the... Go, you know the thing.
Yeah, Joe, actually, I do know the thing, but it sounds like he might need a bit of a hand, so he's picked Jen Psaki or something. Let's see how she goes.
Is, there are flows of gas, of natural gas, I should say, that go through, from Western Europe through Ukraine to Russia, and the other way. From Russia through Ukraine to Western Europe, and we want some of that natural gas to be available to go back into Ukraine.
Yeah, I have to say it was easier under Trump because it was just sanction the fuck out of Russia and Germany so we could sell freedom molecules to Europeans. But let's give her another go. She might improve.
We do not recognize the illegal referendum that took place in portions of Donetsk and Luhansk over the weekend. It was illegal under Ukrainian law and an attempt to create further division and disorder in the country. Its methodology was also highly suspect, with reports of carousel voting, pre-marked ballots, children voting, voting for people who were absent, and even voting in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Obviously, as you know, our focus remains on the May 25th presidential election, which is an opportunity to unite Ukraine and give its citizens a voice in the vote of their country.
Sorry, maybe I'm just ignorant. Well, I guess I am, because I've never heard, what's carousel voting? What is that?
The truth is, as I was reading that, I'm not familiar with that term either. It may be that people weren't checking in. I'll check and see what our team meant specifically by
voting,
that term.
Because children voting, I mean, it's not like they were sitting on horses going around in a circle. Yeah.
I don't think it's a reference to that, Matt. Okay. The point is there were some, the methodology and there were some irregularities we saw on the ground.
Kind of more of the same and a little bit different, isn't it? We think that countries that aren't America don't know how to run elections if they get a result that we don't like, but we're not sure what we're talking about. Yeah, so that we're not sure what we're talking about bit is a bit new and refreshing. Let's get on with it.
No, I can't forget tomorrow when I think of all my sorrow. Well, I had you there, but then I let you go. And now it's all.
Yeah, 1971 there, Harry Nilsson, Can't Live Without You. Our English might have to learn to live without Ted. Now, where did we get up to? Kitty King Ted is now Teen King Ted, engaged to Frenchie Betty. Lady formerly Princess Mary tried to nick off to Germany, claiming that her life was at risk for watching the old magic show. She might just be a bit hysterical, although people are looking to make a regent, and that could be a bit deadly for her. Nobody has much confidence in the English currency. It's been devalued, and on top of hefty inflation, life for common types is pretty hard. We left it with the arrest of Ted Seymour, plus a swag off his team. Looks like a purge, and fair enough. We'd heard that Ted Seymour was planning to murder Dudley and his mate Henry Howard by having their heads off, and that's not nice, Ted Seymour, not nice. What do we need to know more, dear listener? it's shenanigans going on with Dudley. Teen King Ted has been asserting himself a bit. He's 14 after all, but that kind of cuts out the council. They aren't so much worried about Teen Ted running the show, he's the king. It's Dudley they're a bit more worried about, and so let's worry them some more. Dudley's man, John Gates, will become keeper of the dry stamp. Remember that thing? It's Team Ted's signature emboss, so you just press it hard on a bit of paper or parchment or whatever and then ink it in. Dudley can get whatever he wants signed. Still, Team Ted is, at the moment, way more interested in government than his dad had been, so we might not be able to put too much past him. Security in London has been ramped up following the Ted Seymour arrest. Nobody's even allowed to say the word Seymour, and there are watchmen everywhere. People who do talk about Ted Seymour will be arrested. 22nd of October? Oh, actually, just thinking about it, that could be good for King Donald. If anybody says Biden, have him arrested, Donald. Try that. 22nd of October 1551, it's an assembly of the guilds to come and hear the gossip about Ted Seymour. He had intended to seize the Tower of London, destroy London, then nick off to the Isle of Wight. Fuck, say the guilds, do you think we're all Republicans in your Fox News? Destroy London? Really? The murmurings are all in fact that it's greedy Dudley making a power play. And they could be right there. They aren't that upset with it, though. They remember the problems caused by Seymour rushing through more and more reforms and, you know, just ruling really badly. On the other hand, they think that Dudley's a bit of a dead shit, so it's a case of we'll support whichever one we dislike the least. Who do we dislike the least? Oh, it seems to be Seymour. We need to get Teen Ted away from Dudley. Let's get the sheriffs in to look after the Teen King and fuck all those noble wankers. Tensions are ramping up and for some reason Dudley's guys will try to grab the chain of office from the Sheriff of London. That will end up with a dust-up at St. Paul's, and that's the holy house of baby Jesus. Anti-Seymour types are writing to Dudley saying, don't give this guy another chance. Meanwhile, the friendly staff at the Tower of London torture department are having tea and chats with prisoners. William Crane will confess under threat of no more scones for Arvo tea that the place where the beheading of Dudley was to happen was to be Paget's house, and that Fitzalan, Lord Arundel, was in on the plot. More? Yeah. Seymour and Fitzalan met at Ted Seymour's house in August, and Fitzalan was wearing a black cloak. Oh, now, how do you know who's guilty, my dear listener? If they wear black, there you go, that's the bad guy. Seymour and Fitzalan discussed getting Dudley into the slammer and wind back the religious reforms, and Fitzalan swore loyalty to Seymour. But then Ted Seymour had a change of heart and stopped going to the council meetings and told his missus not to interfere with politics. Don't even talk about it. Bring in Fitzalan to the Tower, who will confirm it all. Yes, we had intended to have Dudley arrested, but there was no talk about harming him. No holding back on scones or anything nasty like that. So there you go, and if you don't mind, I'll be off. Time to walk the dog. It'll be just a minute, laddie. Have a look at this full confession that Ted Seymour has signed. Oh, fuck, says Fitzalan. Okay, fair cop. Ladies and gentlemen, if you ever find yourself in the slammer, never, ever, ever admit to anything. In fact, say nothing at all. That's what lawyers are for. But I guess these guys didn't allow lawyers in, and they had hard and nasty men to help people talk. Back to Fitzalan, who will say, okay, you know everything, you've got that confession, but as for me, I never meant to harm anyone. I just wanted to make things better. Now, Fitzalan might have done a bit better if he'd had a bit of a closer look at the signature on Ted Seymour's confession, in air quotes. Yeah, he's been fooled. The council will step up the interrogations, authorising the use of any and all toys in the torture workshop. Here's my tip for them, because I decided to package up my medical stuff. I thought, let's kind of get it all over and done with nice and quick. So in 2 days this week, I went to the doctor, the dentist, the optometrist, the podiatrist, and the periodontist. And I'm ready to confess anything after all that. It was me who tore up all the Trump votes, and I spent nights and nights making out extra Biden votes. There, I'd done it. Now, it's not about me, it's about Ted Seymour. and he will get Big Swing and Dick Dudley to conduct his interview. Here's the questions Dudley's got for Ted Seymour. Did you intend to toss me in the sunner? Did you promise to bring back the old magic show? Who was helping you to take the Isle of Wight? Who is to help you issue a proclamation against the council saying we were turning Teen King Ted against his dear sister lady, formerly Princess Mary? There's no records of Ted's answers, sorry. 16th of November, 1551, and we're preparing for a trial. No need to think too hard about it. Just copy Henry VIII's method for a full, fair and impartial trial, like the one he conducted against the Duke of Buckingham, for example. Jury will be the council with 22 nobles, although Talbot, Lord Shrewsbury and fan of Ted Seymour, will have a runny nose and a note from his mum saying he can't come. 30th of November, and Ted Seymour will be tomorrow's the day, and we're taking back your Order of the Garter. Security is triple tight. 5 a.m. and we're off to court for a trial that will last from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. At least they didn't really keep you waiting too long in a filthy disease-ridden slammer where you can get humiliated on a daily basis. No, we're waiting for the 21st century and Julian Assange for that. Let's hear the charges. Edward, Duke of Somerset, did on 20th of April at his mansion house called Somerset Place in the Strand compass and imagine with other persons to deprive the king of his royal dignity and to seize the king's person and at his, the duke's, will and pleasure exercise royal authority. That the duke, in order to carry his traitorous intentions into effect, together with Michael Stanhope, Miles Partridge, Thomas Holcroft, Francis Newdigate and other persons, should always put in and other persons, assembled for the purpose of taking and imprisoning John Dudley, now Duke of Northumberland. Furthermore, that the said Duke of Somerset compassed to obtain possession of the Great Seal, and also to obtain possession of the Tower of London, and of the treasure, jewels, and munitions of war contained therein. And furthermore, that the said Duke of his own authority incited the citizens and inhabitants of London to rebellion and insurrection against the king, with drums and trumpets crying out in English, Liberty, Liberty, and for the purpose of robbing and destroying such of the other citizens and inhabitants as would not follow his will. Fuck, I hope Rudy Giuliani heard all that. He could learn a lesson there. But, my dear listener, this is definitely a charge of treason. Ted Seymour will deny, 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 and why wouldn't you? No official records, but we can have another look at Teen Ted's diary. I must say that I take my hat off to Sainsbury's. They seem to attract a better class of person. I saw a vicar choosing toilet paper. He chose a 4-roll pack of purple 3-ply. He must have money to burn. He could have bought some shiny white and given the difference to the poor. What a hypocrite. Well, hang on, my dear listener, that's the diary of Adrian Mole, not Teen King Ted. Here's Ted. For the banquet, he swore it was untrue and required more witnesses. When Crane's confession was read, he would have him come face to face. For London, he meant nothing for hurt of any lord but for his own defence. For the gendarmerie, it were but a mad matter for him to enterprise with his 100 against 900. For having men in his chamber at Greenwich, it seemed he meant no harm, because when he could have done harm, he did not. Yeah, Teen King Ted doesn't sound too convinced about this, and fair enough, like, Ted Seymour had 100 guys, now he's not going to send them up against Dudley's 900, and he has had plenty of chances in the past to do harm if he wanted, and he actually hasn't, he's just been incompetent. So, yeah, Kitty King Ted's not convinced. Now, let's remember the Teen King wasn't there. He relied on Dudley's guys to tell him what was going on. Teen King Ted then will make it a bit more official and make up his mind, writing to a guy saying Seymour had barely answered and seemed to have confessed to charges of felony. Meanwhile, we do have another report saying how sad Dudley was with the proceedings. Now, I think this might be a show, and Dudley might have been happy on the inside and just trying to look unhappy on the outside, so no boo-hoo-hooing for him, my dear listener. And the whole thing will backfire on him. His show of trying to not be seen to be going hard on his dear mate Ted Seymour will be taken as meaning he hasn't got any evidence. Debate will be heated in the House of Lords. Is this shit really treason? Shouldn't Dudley even be involved in this, given that it's more about him than Teen King Ted? Yeah, they're not liking Dudley's tweets. Outside Westminster Hall, common smelly types are yelling, God save the Duke. Now, the Lords don't like that, of course, but it's time for all good men to come to a decision. Guilty or not guilty, and it will be... Can you imagine a drum roll? Because I just can't be arsed putting one in here. So, not guilty. Oh, fuck me. Not guilty. This must be about the first ever not guilty treason decision I can remember. What happens when the verdict has come in is that Westminster spokesperson Kayleigh McEnany comes out and says, we shall not see diseases like the coronavirus come here, and isn't it refreshing when contrasting it with the awful presidency of President Obama? Yeah, kidding. No, that is a direct quote from her. She said that about 12 months ago. She said, yeah, the US will never ever get coronavirus. It wouldn't dare come in because we've got President King Donald. But the coronavirus did go into the USA. Sorry, I should really stop this shit and get back to history. The guardsman of the hall who has a nice axe will come out. Now, if the axe points up, it's guilty. If it points down, it's innocent. Out he comes with the axe pointing down. Innocent. And the crowd goes crazy. Hooray, hooray. There was such a shout of men and women, for they thought that he had been quit, for they threw their 100 caps on high for gladness. Teen King Ted gets the news and says, oh, that's what I thought all along. I thought he was innocent. Off go the messengers all over town. He's been acquitted. Hooray! Now, Ted's auditor will be so pleased when he hears the news. He'll hand out bread and drink to the poor and send out servants to distribute tuppence to any poor people they see. That got a mention in history because accountants and auditors are not really known to hand out anything. Are you, my dearest listener, like Ted Seymour, having a big old sigh of relief? Well, hang on just a tick. Not guilty of treason, but guilty of committing a felony under the newly passed legislation regarding the gathering of unlawful assemblies, and the penalty for that little misdemeanour is death. Oh, dear. I wonder if our auditor can get his pennies back from the poor. Ted will thank the court for the trial, ask Dudley to forgive him, ask these misses, kiddies, servants and debts be taken care of. Dudley, that man of ultimate kindness, will say, Duke of Somerset, you see yourself a man in peril of life and sentenced to die. Once before I saved you in a like danger, nor will I desist to serve you now, though you may not believe me. Appeal to the mercy of the King's Majesty, which I doubt not he will extend to you. For myself, I gladly pardon all things which you've designed against me, and I will do my best that your life may be spared. And then Dudley will be straight off to Teen King Ted, saying, yeah, no, Seymour meant to do you in, Teen King. How's the crowd going now? Seems half are booing that he's to die, while half are cheering that he is to die. US 2020, isn't it? Oh, God, I'm back on it. Eventually, Dudley will say it was a stitch-up and that he felt guilty about it for the rest of his life. No help to Ted Seymour there. Still, if Dudley was around now and could look back at the evidence, he would probably conclude that Seymour was plotting his downfall. And at this stage, Seymour would have been mad to let Dudley live. Moot point, anyway. 2 days after the trial, Seymour will crack up and confess that he'd hired a Frenchy hitman to kill Dudley. Now, it's a bit of a mystery for us. The Frenchy hitman will be brought in for a chat, say whatever is not recorded. Then the council will pay off his debts and buy him a house. Yeah, that's nice work if you can get it. My speculation is that they had this guy to show Teen Ted, to convince Ted that Seymour was guilty. John Dudley will puzzle us some more, as he's spending a lot of time with Seymour in the tower. My guess is that he's just a bit worried that an actual execution could come back to bite him on the bum when Teen Ted takes over. Ted may want a bit of revenge for the killing of his uncle. On top of all this, there's been a cock-up in the dye department. That's the dye that they use to mint coins. It seems to show a ragged staff, which is Dudley's emblem. So people are saying it's a sure sign that Dudley wants the silly hat. London remains tense. Preachers at St. Paul's are warned not to read out any bills presented. Writer of one such bill will be tossed in the slammer along with his printer. A guy singing a lewd ditty will be put in the stocks and have his ears cut off. Order will be forced in with the council's private army assembling in London to march around looking fierce. Teen Ted will be impressed with the display. Common people, not so much. This band of 1,000 hard men are there to intimidate people.
I left my home in Georgia, heading for that Frisco Bay. I had nothing to live for, looked like nothing gonna come my way. Oh, I'm just a sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. On the dock of the bay, facing time.
A nice little bit of sitting on the dock of the bay there. See if that can help our Londoners to just chill out a bit. Now we're into winter, so it's tournament season, and Teen King Ted will write lots about it in his diary. It's all feasts and good times. Bringing the revellers to entertain the Teen King and take his mind off messy beheadings of old uncles. It'll work. Teen Ted will snub the Imperial Ambassador mid-conversation to watch the entertainments. That's how good they are. But the Ambassador's contacts are saying that when the party stops for the night, Teen Ted is a bit somber about Uncle Ted's imprisonment. But not so as you might notice. He's been groomed that Ted Seymour is a bad, bad man, so he won't show any feelings for him. It's flashback with lots of people hoping that Uncle Ted Seymour will get a nice present of a pardon on New Year's Day again. Dudley's got other plans. Parliament is due on the 23rd of January and he wants to take the matter out of their hands before then. He wants a dead Ted. Helping out Dudley is the Frenchy Ambassador whispering in Teen Ted's ear. Now what's in it for the Frenchy Ambassador? Well, Ted Seymour wants to break up Teen Ted and Frenchy Betty to get Teen Ted on with Seymour's daughter, Ted's cousin. The persuasive arguments to Teen Ted are that Ted Seymour had fucked up when he was running things, and he's so popular with the ordinary types that they're turning away from Teen Ted. That second argument will usually win over any king to signing off on a death warrant. Teen Ted will say, let the law take its course, but make it a merciful beheading, not that full tortured death. 21st of January, 2 days before Parliament and Teen Ted will sign the warrant for execution. 22nd of January, 1551, 8 a.m. and Ted Seymour will take his last trip to Tower Hill. Dudley had quietly moved the execution from 11 a.m. to 8 a.m. hoping to avoid a crowd. That was a fail. The mob had turned up early just in case. Kneel, prayers, then the last speech. Masters and good fellows, I am come hither to die, but a true and faithful man as any was unto the King's Majesty and to his realm. But I am condemned by a law whereunto I am subject, and we all are, and therefore to show obedience I am content to die, wherewith I am well content, being a thing most heartily welcome unto me, for the which I do thank God, taking it for a singular benefit, as ever might have come to me otherwise. For, as I am a man, I have deserved at God's hand many deaths, and it has pleased his goodness, whereas he might have taken me suddenly, that I should neither have known him nor myself. Thus now visit me, and call me with this present death, as you do see, where I have had time to remember and acknowledge him, and to know also myself, for the which I do thank him most heartily. And, my friends, more I have to say to you concerning religion. I have always been, being an authority, a further of it to the glory of God, to the utmost of my power, whereof I am nothing sorry, but rather have cause and do rejoice most gladly that I have done so, for the mightiest benefit of God that ever I had, or any men might have, in this world, beseeching you all to take it so, and to follow it on still, for, if not, there will follow and come a worse, great plague. Oh, shit, sorry about that. It was that just as Ted finished talking, there was some sort of loud noise, but we got no idea what the fucking loud noise was. But I gave you one, didn't I? Run away, run away! It's panic with people yelling, Jesus save us, Jesus save us. Ted Seymour is amazed. Sir Anthony Brown is trying to calm the crowd. In the confusion, someone yells out, it's the king's pardon. So the mob will start to chant, pardon, pardon is come. God save the king. Yeah, no, it wasn't a pardon. It's some sort of loud noise. Ted will start talking again. It's all good. God save the king and so on. Hope anyone I gave the shits to will pardon me. Yada blah, yada blah. And then please shut up, crowd. This is hard enough without you mob jabbering on. Last job is for Ted to read out his confession, then shake hands with everyone, pop a bit of cash over to the executioner, and there we go. The mob can now come and get a bit of Duke blood, either on their hands or on a piece of cloth, on their hankies. Nice souvenir of the day. Teen Ted's diary says the Duke of Somerset has had his head cut off upon Tower Hill between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning. Now that's it. Teen Ted's dad killed 2 wives, now Teen Ted has killed 2 uncles. Huh. Let's have a blast from the past and read a bit of Anne of Cleves' letter to her brother. God knows what will happen next. Ray there, case for us, rah. What will be, and what will be for poor little Normie Rowe, who was about 17 when he put that out, was that the government were going to rig the ballot for national service and send Normie Rowe to Vietnam to kill Vietnamese people because they wanted a pop star to go. They thought that would be good press. And so poor Normie Rowe had to go over there to kill Vietnamese people. Lovely people, the Vietnamese. Marvellous people. Don't know why he'd want to kill him. And you can still find articles from Normie Rowe saying how that totally fucked up his life. So thanks, Australian government. Back to Anne, who said, God knows what will happen next. Well, I'll tell you, Anne. Sir Ralph Vane, Sir Thomas Arundel, Sir Miles Partridge and Sir Michael Stanhope were indicted for their parts in the conspiracy. Stanhope and Arundel will have their heads off. Partridge and Vane hung. The Earl of Arundel, Fitzalan, and Secretary Paget will escape execution, but their political careers are in tatters. Dudley couldn't get the evidence on them. Fitzalan, the Earl of Arundel, will spend about a year in the slammer while Dudley looks for evidence. Paget will actually get done on a lesser charge of having his hand in the petty cash tin, which, let's face it, probably every councillor had also done. Paget, being a bit common, will cop it pretty hard for this. He will no longer be a garter knight. His estates will be taken away, big fines, but he will be successful in begging to be allowed to stay in London. Dudley now seems to have total control over Teen King Ted and the government. Observers note that Teen King Ted keeps a constant watch on Dudley for visual clues of what he should say and do. Dudley will keep up a nice stream of flattery. It works. Just observe King Donald. Kings love it. Dudley's man, Sir John Gates, will join the Privy Chamber and hold that important dry stamp. He can whisper in Teen Ted's ear anything that Dudley doesn't want Ted to know came from himself. French ambassador will report that Dudley has manipulated the Privy Chamber so that everyone in it is his man. He's put his son-in-law there to totally agree with Dudley's advice. Not sure of his son-in-law's name. Was it Jared Kushner? Fuck, I'm obsessed with Sumerian stuff, aren't I? Back to England. Even Teen Ted's secret spy, that guy who used to give him the lowdown on council meetings, is now Dudley's man. Dudley has taken to secret meetings at night with Teen Ted to brief him on what to say the next day. And the council will play along, being amazed how clever Ted is. We're controlling the king while outwardly displaying that he is fully in charge. Clever. Still, Teen Ted does have a mate, Nicholas Throckmorton, and Ted will decide he's rather have fun and games with Nicholas than council stuff. One day, Teen Ted will decide to knight Nicholas. But Nicholas, smartly working out that Dudley would be cross, decided to run away. Ted will find him and then make him a knight, whether he wants to or not. So Throckmorton will actually be way more popular. Now we all know he's the king's favourite. Throckmorton will write stuff for us and lets us know that Teen Ted is a bit moody about Dudley having had Ted Seymour killed. Now Dudley will suspect that Throckmorton is turning Ted against him and start working his nastiness. Throckmorton tells us he much misliked our secret conference, the privy whispering that the kings did use. He thought they made little for his defence, and that alone the king I did abuse. With tales be sure of me he did misdeem, who thought I drew not yoked in his team. Once again, shit poetry. Fuck Throckmorton, what are you giving us that for? Throckmorton is broke. Teen Ted will give him lands and an income. Having had fun and games with Throckmorton, Ted will find time to be more involved in government. He will write to ambassadors, letting them know how he wants them to proceed with the diplomacy bullshit. He'll draft documents like a thing called Points of Weighty Matters to be immediately concluded on by my council. Yeah, that sounds important, doesn't it? His diary shows, though, that he's becoming more mature and taking a prominent position on the council and making decisions. One we'll like is, I did deny, after a sort, the request to enter into a war. Well done, that peacenik king. He'll be able to give away his spy soon, as he's attending more and more sessions in the council himself. By March, he set up a weekly meeting to hear the debating of things of most importance. Think of this like a weekly briefing on matters of state. That's setting himself up to start to take over the ruling gig. Now, April 1552, and we get a new Book of Common Prayer. This one looks like it's intended to be a temporary job that is supposed to satisfy both reformers and conservatives. Obviously, that will annoy both reformers and conservatives. Religion is a no-compromise proposition. There's no compromise in this shit. It's our way or the highway. What's reformer John Hooper got to say about it? I am so much offended with that book that if it not be corrected, I neither can nor will communicate with the church in the administration of the supper. Yeah, that's a communion, the bread without yeast shit. The reformers have a plan, which is to send reformer-type bishops out and about, and that's also progressed. Bishops report back that, oh, it's all shit in England. Crap church attendance, and half the priests can't even recite the Ten Commandments. Most of them have got no idea that they aren't supposed to be doing the old magic trick, with others finding workarounds for the new Book of Common Prayer. Worse, the nobles don't get it. They're asking for things like full mass at a funeral, with masses being sung in perpetuity, while thinking that was all good with the Book of Common Prayer. Look, we might have smashed up the statues and whitewashed the churches, but we certainly have not converted into a Protestant nation. Somebody needs to do something, because we're not doing the religion right. Okay, a new Book of Common Prayer for clarity. Some of the ceremonies that had previously been retained are out, meaning all the old ceremonies are gone. Got that? All gone. No, none of the old ceremonies, all gone. Look at the book for how you now do baptism, confirmation and burial. That's the only way to do them. The new book, that's the way. No more prayers for the dead. There's no fucking purgatory, so no prayers needed. That's pretty straightforward, surely. The bread without yeast does not turn into the real baby Jesus. The shot of house red does not turn into the real bud of the baby Jesus. It was a magic trick that didn't really work, so forget it. It's just about remembering our Lord and Saviour, baby Jesus. Take and eat this in remembrance that Christ died for thee, and feed on him thy heart by faith with thanksgiving. Just remember that, you can't go wrong. And forget about the Virgin Mary with the magical hymen. All saints and prophets, you don't have to remember them. Just don't even mention them over a beer with your mates. They're dead to us. And lastly, give up your fancy duds. We're not the church of bling. You guys just wear plain black. Thank you. And how hard was that, ladies and gentlemen? Pretty straightforward, but of course there will be a PS after the bloody thing has been published. No kneeling for communion. Now, this version of the prayer book is the high mark for Teen Ted's Reformation. It is actually the model for all future versions, with only minor changes being made to it for about 400 years. It will all be confirmed in a statement of doctrine, with the highlights being the justification by faith alone. Quick reminder for you, that's where we are all sinners. Don't forget, we're all sinners. So we're all heading straight to hell unless God forgives us for believing in him. And to back up the justification by faith alone, we'll start believing in predestination, which I kind of do anyway, I have to say. Goes with block time, which says the universe not only contains all matter, it contains all time. If it does contain all time, and it seems it does, then everything that has happened is happening and still happening in the universe, and everything that will happen is happening and will continue to happen in the universe, and it's just that we're wandering through in a linear fashion. We just haven't seen it yet. That's off track. That's astrophysics, and we should be on religion. Changing the bread without yeast into the real baby Jesus is now repugnant to the plain words of the scriptures, and the old bells and whistles type ceremonies are fables and dangerous deceits. There, the statement of doctrine makes everything perfectly clear, and we'll end with this last little bit. Send us whatever plate, bills, vestments and whatever for the royal coffers, because the government is just about fucking bankrupt. Time for us to give Teen Ted some points. A preacher, one Bishop Nicholas Ridley, will give a sermon on, believe it or not, being nice to the poor. Teen Ted will say, "Hey Nick, I'm the top dog, so tell me how I can help poor people." Nick will ask for a letter of authority to the Lord Mayor for the Mayor and Aldermen to help him on the project. Off he goes, and we'll get the Palace of Bridewell to be repurposed as Christ's Hospital, as a place of correction for the idols and the vagabonds. A quick reminder to you, my dear listener, that hospital back then wasn't hospital now. It's more a place to sleep and get a feed. Now let's remove points, because this will be a long time to be made a reality. You'll know it's happened when we get to the sad and tragic deathbed scene for Ted. It took until he was dying for him to actually sign off on the transfer of the palace to a place for hungry and cold people to go to for shelter and food. But still, it's nice to see an actual bit of work on the poor, isn't it?
Just look at all those hungry mouths we have to feed. Take a look at all the suffering we breathe. So many lonely faces scattered all around, searching for what they need. Is this the world we created? What did we do it for? Is this the world we invaded? Against the law, so it seems in the end. Is this what we're all living for today? The world that we created.
Yeah, a little bit of Queen there. Is this the world we created? And the song that they created there was specifically for the absolutely marvellous, possibly best of all time concert, the 1985 Live Aid thingy. And for you young'uns, it kind of went for 3 days. Started in Australia, then it went to England, and then finally to the US. Brilliant stuff. Created by a guy called Bob Geldof, who was a pop singer. Raised $283 million for the Ethiopian famine. And failed, because what they didn't take into account was that the Ethiopian government might spend it on bangy things, which they did. There was a civil war going on, so the government got all this cash from these pop stars and said, "Yeah, we really need some more guns." Good on you, Ethiopian government. But of course, 35 years later in Ethiopia, there's, civil war, and there was just a massacre the other day. 600 civilians massacred. Yeah, some things don't change, do they? Let's get back to England. 2nd of April, 1552, and Teen King Ted is sick. Oh, measles and smallpox. That doesn't look good. But wait, 12th of April and he's well again. Now, smallpox can be like that. You can get past it fairly quickly or it's totally deadly. Maybe Betty will write a nice letter, kind of saying it was a good thing to get these and get over them because gossip was that Teen Ted might be dying. And now you've had them, the gossip can stop. 28th of April, and the ambassador writes, Teen Ted looks tip-top. 12th of May, and he's off on his horsey for some riding at the Rings and Artery. 30th of May, and he's right into government business, signing stuff himself rather than getting the collective signatures of the council. 8th of June, and he's up the mayor and aldermen in front of the guilds for charging high prices for goods and services. He's looking pretty much like a king. Summer is coming, so it's to be progress. But it'll be trouble. The Teen King has got 4,000 horse going with him, and that needs a lot of paddock. Tons of people will have to be sent home. What was he thinking? You'd be a noble back in the day and have a king with a few thousand mates drop in. How would you feed them, and what about your poor old wine cellar? It would cop a total flogging. He'll proceed on the progress with just 150 guys. Now, fuck, that's bad enough, 150 people dropping in on you. He's having fun though, being feasted and doing plenty of hunting. Down to Portsmouth to inspect the naval defences, and he's not happy. Teen King Ted will want plenty of improvements to those defences. Off to Southampton, and let's have a taste of his diary again. The citizens have bestowed for our coming great cost in painting, repairing and rampairing of their walls. The town is handsome, and for the bigness of it, as fair houses as be in London. The citizens made great cheer, and many of them kept costly tables. Off he goes again, Hampshire, Dorset, Wiltshire, and at Salisbury the alderman will hand over £20 in gold. Now you're talking. August and Wilton, home of William Herbert, murderer and recently restored Earl of Pembroke, whose whatever great-great-granddad William Herbert had killed Ted's great-great-granddad Owen Tudor, and took the Earl of Pembroke title from Ted's great-granddad Edmund Tudor. Oh, all water under the bridge. More presents here and there, and let's get Ted home on the 15th of September. Dudley will be pleased to have the lad back. It's been busy and Dudley's a bit sick. It's a fallen uvula. This is the thing that hangs out at the back of your throat. You need that thing to swallow and speak. It can get infected and swell. Dudley says he can hardly eat meat. It's not only that, he also describes what seems to be stomach ulcers. Nasty, and he might have some blood in his lungs, and that's not a good sign at all. He might be a bit fucked, really. The being busy in London while Ted's been away part is about rumours and plots. William Lowe will be popped into the pillory for saying Henry VIII wasn't Teen King Ted's real dad. Elizabeth Huggins, servant of Ted Seymour's missus, will say Dudley should have died, not Seymour. Teen King Ted is unnatural for killing his uncle. She'll do time in the slammer. Seditious bills will be published with the forged signature of Archie Tom Cramer looking for a rebellion. A guy Hawkins will be captured and off to meet the torturers in the tower for that little bit of forgery. Dudley will write to the council members saying, be ready to defend the king with your goods, your land and your lives. Sure, they say, and continue building new mansions and accumulating wealth while, you know, we've got poverty and unhappy people out there. Law and order is breaking down, and the country's debts are mounting. Does that sound a bit like the US again? Oh, fuck, I'm back on the US. Dudley has received warnings that the nation's credit standing is going down like Super Sausage Chuck's. Yeah, Chuck, Holy Roman Emperor of the Sausages, King of Spain, Plunderer of the Americas, he's broke too. He just kept spending, 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 and then spending on stupid foreign wars. He's been doing it his whole life. And what's he gained? Zero. But gaining that big fat nothing has cost him big time. He is offering 16% interest to anybody who is game to lend to him. And who will lend to him? Right now, nobody. That's who. Chuck is a big fat dud. Dudley will write to the council, I say, old chaps, we've been putting off this money problem for a while because we've all been so busy getting rich, but we'd better damn well address it now. The bean counters will produce a report saying we'd spent £3.5 million on stupid foreign wars over the last 10 years, and that is seriously bad news. Now, hang on. What did we English gain? Same as Chuck. A big, fat, fucking zero. But I'm sure that 20-year-old war in Afghanistan will pay off big time any day now. War is just like any other addiction. It's destructive and it'll send you broke. Still, this will be handy, this report, to toss Ted Seymour's reputation under a bus. Henry VIII had left the country in debt after his stupid Frenchy War, but above all, the debt had been augmented by the willful government of the late Duke of Somerset, who took upon him the protectorship and government of his own authority, and his highness being by the prudence of his said father left in peace with all princes, suddenly that man's unskilful protectorship and less expert in government was plunged into wars, whereby his majesty's charges was suddenly increased to the point of 120,000 to 140,000 pounds a year, these things now being so onerous and weighty to the king's majesty. Now, my dear listener, you know that at least half of that is bullshit, but that's what government media statements are like. It's like that one I gave you earlier, the official government statement from the White House. We will not see diseases like the coronavirus come here, and isn't it refreshing when contrasting it with the awful presidency of President Obama? Just one of a gazillion tons of bullshit served up to us every day. Teen Ted has got past the magic age of 14 and can stop the studies if he wants. He doesn't want. And it looks like he's taken after his dad as a top scholar. What survives of his library shows books in 6 different languages. His own papers show a very talented lad. We can get a description of him from Italian doctor Hieronymus Cardano, who's been brought in because Teen Ted's a bit, sickly again. No, he's always been a bit sickly. He was of a stature somewhat below middle height, pale-faced with grey eyes, a grave aspect, decorous and handsome, adding that he was rather of a bad habit of body than a sufferer from fixed diseases. He had a somewhat projecting shoulder blade, but such defects do not amount to deformity. Ted and his doctor will chat, and Cardano will tell us that Ted spoke fluent Latin and showed a great deal of reason and logic. He likes the liberal arts and sciences. Ted, though, seemed old before his time and carried himself like an old man. It might seem a miracle of nature to behold the excellent wit and forwardness that appeared in him being yet but a child. This I speak not rhetorically to amplify things or to make them more than truth is. Yes, the truth is more than I do utter. Teen Ted is also a bit short-sighted and a bit deaf. He owned a pair of spectacles and had a glass to help him read. His treatment for his eyesight, just in case your eyesight's a bit poor and you might want to try this at home, it's a concoction of red fennel, sage, herbs, powder of 15 peppercorns, white wine, 3 spoons of honey, and 5 of water of a man-child, that is, an innocent. That'd be a virgin with his boy pee. You need virgin boy pee. There you go. And this stuff will be applied with a feather. Yeah, not to my eyes, you don't. Cardano will have several visits with Ted, and each time he's more impressed than the last. He's going to be a great king. Just to help out, Cardano, who is also an astrologer, will do Ted's horoscope to give him an advance warning. Ted is due to get sick at age 32, 34, and 55. Nothing major, because he's going to live for a long, long time. Oh, glad we got that bit sorted out. 23rd of September 1552, and we're off to Greenwich for Christmas. It's all fun, fun, fun with the Lord of Misrule and the triumph of Cupid put on by George Howard, brother of headless Catherine Howard. But our man Dudley isn't happy. He's still sick. He'll write to William Cecil, "When others went to their sups and pastimes after travail, I went to bed with a careful heart and a weary body, and yet abroad no man scarcely had any good opinion of me, are now by extreme sickness and otherwise constrained to seek some health and quietness, I am not without a new evil imagination of men. What should I wish any longer this life that sees such frailty in it? Surely but for a few children which God has sent me, which also helps to pluck me on my knees, I have no great cause to desire to tarry much longer here. And thus, to satisfy you and others whom I take for friends, I have entered into the bottom of my care, which I cannot do without sorrow. You know, all that clawing his way to the top of the pops hasn't really paid off for John Dudley to make him happy. To be fair, Archie Tom Cramer may not be too happy either. He's having a dust-up with Scotty radical preacher John Knox, who we really have to meet. We don't want to. It'd be better if he just fucked off, but he won't. He's in there. He's in the history and he's staying. But right now, John Knox is up Cramer saying this here new-fangled Book of Common Prayer continues to sanction idolatry. Dudley had allowed Knox to speak out, hoping he would sharpen Archie Cramer up a bit, but it's like he's let a trump of religion out of the box. First thing for John Knox, who incidentally right now is Bishop of Rochester, that old see of St. John Fisher. The poorest see in England, that one. Anyway, first thing for John Knox when Dudley let him out of the box was to get stuck into Dudley about his religious beliefs. Oh, why let a fanatic wander away from his see, Dudley? The good news is that Knox is so loud you can't hear any of the other voices of dissent, so apart from him, everyone will shut the fuck up about religion. Dudley has also addressed our economic woes. Foreign loans have been repaid and the currency has been stabilised. See what can happen when you stop fighting stupid foreign wars? He's also commissioned a report into corruption, waste and suggestions for further economic reforms. It's even been going okay with Lady formerly Princess Mary, who's visited court a couple of times and was entertained with magnificence. She was met on the way by Dudley with 100 horses, and the council were at the outer gate and gave her a great big bow just as if she were queen. New Year's 1553, and Mary is back to visit teen Ted, but it's not too good. Ted's in bed with a runny nose and a nasty cough, and we haven't invented Vicks vapor rub yet. Days go by, and he's not getting any better, and now he's having a bit of trouble breathing. The doctors are all busy looking at that shoulder blade. Surely something to do with that shoulder blade. I can tell you, my dear listener, that shoulder blade is a magnetic genetic thing from the Seymour family and nothing to do with getting sick. We'll get through to Lent, and it's an unhappy court and an unhappy London. Noblemen in London will not go anywhere without some big beefy boys to look after them. Preachers are denouncing staff at the court for not being good with the new religion. They're the problem. It's them, and we need to build a big, beautiful wall. An anonymous prophecy will be out saying it's all going very badly. The Thames will run with blood. The king will disappear, never to be seen again. Now also, we've had signs. A dog has been found carrying a bit of dead kitty in its mouth, and we all need to remember that Ted Seymour had failed to go to Sunday school and then he died. Dudley and the council will say, fuck all this shit, who can we kick? Where's Archie Cramer? In comes Tom Cramer for a kickin'. He's been putting in the really hard yards reforming canon law. Stop that, they say. Go out and give your employees a good kicking and tell them to get on board with the new prayer book, and just in case you aren't sure how a good kicking goes, we'll demonstrate on you. 1st of March, Parliament. Low key. Teen Ted will attend for about 10 minutes, then it's back to bed for him. He's not well, but still working from home, coming up with articles for the better running of government and attending his once weekly meeting to debate stuff. He's signing more and more documents, and his role and the council's role are getting a bit blurred. This kid is actually ready to take on the top job, but he's just not well enough to do it now. Essentially, though, if we look at the documents, he's pretty much running the kingdom. 17th of March, and Ted is confined to quarters. He's lost weight, and doctors think any change in environment could do him in. April, and he's rallied. He can even go out to play, but perhaps he shouldn't. By the end of the month, he's back in trouble. We even have to delay the annual garter night thingy, and you know it's trouble when we delay that. He's also having technicolour yawns, coughing up a mix of yellow, black and pink bile or whatever. Ugh. Yellow, black and pink doesn't sound good, does it? Ted's been moved to Greenwich away from the harmful vapours of London. Yeah, they're not harmful, they're just smelly, but our guys don't know that. Lady, formerly Princess Mary, is writing nice letters. Makes a change from her earlier letters, but she must be aware how all this could change her life in a big way. 12th of May, and the reports are that Teen Ted is not expected to live. Doctors think that he has a tumour on his lung, plus he has a fever, and now he's got bed sores all over his body. Rumours are out, and don't you repeat them, my dear listener. 27th of May, and a guy is off to the pillory for saying Ted's dead. This time it will be Gnarly's ear to the thing to keep him in it. Ugh. Another guy will be there with him, and will have both ears cut off. The council all going, la la la, nothing unusual happening. Dicks. Jousts will be postponed. Ammunition and artillery are being moved around. Council members are buying up armour, and they've got carpenters in to tidy up the fleet. Non-council nobles are leaving the city and heading home. Windsor Castle is stocking up on food and booze. Troops are heading off to protect our borders against foreign invasion. Still, the Teen King is working. He should be sending out for hookers. Who wants to die a virgin? But he's not me. He's a worker. And what's he been working on? The succession. Henry had made it clear.
Ted, then Mary, then baby Betty. Simple. But Ted's looking to turn everything upside down.
Forget family. Mary and Betty can piss off. He wants a new dynasty founded on the true faith. The real one. Not that Pope bullshit we had for 1,000 years. When we look at his document, it starts with a good firm hand. Not the writing of someone who's sick, so we think it might have started a while ago. And the thing makes it clear that he may marry and create a nice Prince of Wales to go next. Now this may make us think that Teen Ted's problem with Mary and baby Betty of the Beautilicious Bum is that they're girlies. The Tudor world is a male-dominated world, so that would not be surprising. And we should always remember that a female king, if we ever get one, must obey her husband, and she might marry a total dick. So it's a bit dangerous to put a girlie on the big chair. Now, the document does look like Ted's own work with no help from Dudley. Gossip is that some guys were encouraging him to get Mary out of the succession, but we'll never know if it was outside influences. Now, the original draft says that if Ted dies childless, then the succession will go via Frances Brandon, daughter of Henry's sister Mary and her man Charles Brandon. So it will go through her to her Marleys, but she's only got daughters. So we're hoping that she might have a son sometime soon. Mary and baby Betty will get £1,000 a year, and if they marry Mr. Wright for the council, then they'll get a bonus of £10,000, but no silly hat. All good then, with just that one small problem, there are no male heirs to the big chair. And Ted's sick. We need to leap into action and get the two eldest daughters of Frances Brandon married off. That is Lady Jane and Catherine Grey. Bring in Dudley to help pick bridegrooms. Let's see. He says, Jane's the most likely one to knock out the next king, so I think in my totally impartial way that she should marry Guildford Dudley, who I know for a fact is single and would be up for it, and I know that because by totally odd coincidence, he's my lad. Now, that chat was done on the 20th of May, 1553. 20th of May. 21st of May 1553, they'll be married. It's done.
To give us a plan B, Lord Herbert, eldest son of hard man William Herbert, the Earl of Pembroke, will marry Catherine Grey. Plan C, Lord Hastings, son of the Earl of Huntingdon, will marry Dudley's daughter, Lady Catherine Dudley. And Dudley's brother can marry Lady Margaret Clifford, Jane's cousin. And so her sons will also be in the succession line. Dudley has this all very nicely set up. The mob, of course, will see all this going down, and believe it or not, they can put two and two together. It looks like a coup, and that's because, really, it's a coup. Bloodless, but still a coup. People are yelling, God save the king and defend him from his enemies. Don't worry about his fucking enemies, worry about his friends. A few days later, and Teen Ted will take a turn for the worse. His quick-thinking mind will see that, fuck, I should have started this succession thing earlier. At the moment, right now, this minute, I'm leaving the silly hat to fucking nobody. Okay, he's going to have to scratch out some words on the document and put some different words in. So this gets a bit confusing. It's gone from Lady Frances Brandon's male heirs, for lack of issue, that meaning if she doesn't have any, and that's pretty much the likely scenario, to Lady Jane's male heirs. Okay, so Frances Brandon and any son she may happen to pull out of thin air is gone to Jane Grey's sons, was the original, and now it's Lady Frances Brandon's male heirs, if she has any issue before my death, to Lady Jane and her male heirs. So unless Frances Brandon or Jane Grey can knock out a boy before Ted dies, then Lady Jane Grey will score the silly hat. Oh, great. Great. I'm glad we cleared that up. This thing is kept quiet. Anybody who finds out about it will be totally shocked. Henry having two girlies in the succession was pretty radical, but now Ted's handing it to, well, another girlie who wasn't even a princess. Jane Grey herself had no idea that this had happened. May, and Teen Ted's situation is desperate. He can't sleep and he's begun to swell up. Well, his head and feet have begun to swell. We know this because the Imperial Ambassador has a spy in the room, a medical student who probably just empties bedpans or something. He does not sleep well except when he be stuffed with drugs, which the doctors call opiates. First one thing, then another are given. But the doctors do not exceed 12 grains at a time, for these drugs are never given by doctors, so they say, unless the patient is in great pain or tormented by constant sleeplessness or racked by violent coughing. The sputum which he brings up is livid, black, fetid, and full of carbon. It smells beyond measure. If it is put into a basin full of water, it sinks to the bottom. His feet are swollen all over. To the doctors, all these things portend death, and that within 3 months, except God of his great mercy spare him. Today, the Duke called the doctors together and asked them what the King's chances were. With one voice they answered that since this season of year is kindest to him, but yet nothing does to improve him. So likewise, when autumn comes, it will end his life. The Duke told them not to slacken their efforts, nor cease to pray to God that he should prosper their treatment. Meanwhile, he said, you will be paid your fees every month at the rate of 100 crowns. Now, 12th of June, and Teen Ted will have that succession document sent to the judges of the King's Bench for them to turn it into a legal will. Ooh, tricky, they say. We'll need to talk for ages about this. Their decision is that there is a legal succession already in place. Mary, then baby Betty and her admirable ass. For them to work on Ted's way out idea would be treason. Dudley will hit the roof. Okay, say the judges, how about we draw up something to say that Mary can inherit if she promises not to fuck about with religion. Shit, I hope we're not paying these guys a lot of money. The judges will go to see Teen Ted. Why haven't you done the job, he says. He would put us all in danger of treason, they say. Look, he says, Mary would cause a total fucking riot, and it would be all over with our new and proper religion. So, sure, she's to be disinherited because it's the right thing to do, you fuckknuckles. And besides, have you dimwits forgotten that both Mary and Betty are bastards? For indeed, my sister Mary was the daughter of the king by Catherine the Spaniard, who before she was married to my worthy father had been espoused to Arthur, my father's elder brother, and was therefore for this reason alone divorced by my father. But it was the fate of Elizabeth, my other sister, to have Anne Boleyn for a mother. This woman was indeed not only cast off by my father because she was more inclined to couple with any number of courtiers rather than reverencing her husband, so mighty a king, but also paid the penalty with a head, a greater proof of her guilt. Thus, in our judgment, they will be undeservedly considered as being numbered among the heirs of the king, our beloved father. Now, my dear Buffards, you can draw up the documents or die. Your choice. Smart guys will ask for a pardon in writing first and they'll get it. Ted will sign the thing and will want over 100 guys to sign off saying, yeah, great idea, and we're fully on board. Just a matter of handing out cash, jobs, lands, and for a rundle, it'll be a pardon. And forget the fine, mate, and Team Ted will get his signatures. Hang on, guys, you need to sign this additional document saying you will uphold this after I die. Archie Cranmer will say no. Well, that's brave Tom Cranmer. You don't usually take a principled stance. Look, he says, I swore to your dad to uphold his will. Oh, the bullshit, my dear listener. You can remember it was none other than Archie Tom Cranmer who declared Mary and Betty to be bastards and cut them out of the succession in the first fucking place. Cranmer is for sale, yeah, like everybody else. A document will be drawn up authorising his review of canon law, and that will get his signature, and the bullshit continues to flow. 2nd of July, it will be the traditional prayers at St. Paul's. People paying attention will notice that Mary and Betty are no longer in our thoughts and prayers. They've been omitted. London is restless and Teen Ted will show himself at a window. Might be a mistake. He doesn't look well at all. He's clearly dying. 6th of July, 1533, and Teen King Ted, number 6 of that name, excepting, of course, the Elder, the Martyr and the Confessor, will breathe his last. Ted is dead. Yeah, a little bit of the composer Silvius Weiss there, hung around about the same time as Bach, early 18th century type stuff. Marvellous composer. And I've zero historical fiction for you this week because I've been Santa's little helper. And the old Christmases years ago, I used to spend hours and hours and hours of my own labour on stuff for other people, particularly children. And this year I thought I'd do it again because anybody can go to the shop and buy shit. But doing it yourself, putting in your own hours, I don't know, I like it. But just before I go, a shout out to Joe DiGenova. I don't know if he listens to the show, but Joe, if you do, now Joe, for the rest of you, is a lawyer to King Donald I. And he said this, anybody who thinks that this election went well, like that idiot Krebs, who used to be the head of cybersecurity, which I know that's not a proper sentence, but we covered that a bit at the start of the show, didn't we? You know, Trump's team have been noted for not being able to put a sentence together. He goes on. That guy is a class A moron. Yeah, he's a top moron, obviously. He should be drawn and quartered, taken out at dawn and shot. So Joe, calm the fuck down, firstly, and if you do want to go through with an execution, just get in touch with me and I'll let you know how to do a sentence properly. But for the rest of us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And I think we might go out with a bit of Girl, spelled G-R-L, Girl. With their song Ugly Heart. Hope to see you next week. Bye.